Hi, I'm Madonna Guy, and you're here with The Natural Alternative. Welcome. I'm here with Donna Mortlock today, Director of Blueprint Career Development. Welcome, Donna.
Thanks for having me, Madonna. Nice to
You are
see
absolutely welcome. We have had a few chats over the last 12 months, and I thought your perspective could give some more information for people on the planet, more tools that they can use, just more to make people think about what's going on, how they can improve their own internal world and the world around them. So let's chat. So, how does your,
Yes.
yeah, let's chat, let's chat. So, what's the biggest thing that you see going on in your world with the people around you that they're not coping with at present?
Personally, there's a lot of stress that I'm seeing, and a lot of people that are almost in a fight flight to a low degree. It's constant though, so they're in the fight flight mechanism at a low degree constantly. So when something actually happens that is out of the normal and disturbing, they're super disturbed because they're already kind of up to here
Right.
with that. I'm seeing a lot of people who are ill, with one thing or another. I'm seeing that more in the last probably 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
And then if you look at it on a bigger a scale, we talk about healthcare and a whole bunch of other stuff. And the reality is the statistics around the world are showing we're very, very unhealthy. From a physical, mental, emotional, and if you want to bring that in as well, a spiritual perspective, a lot of people feel lost, although they're putting on the facade of having it all together. And hence, the world of, I guess, Twitter and Facebook and those things
Yeah.
is people putting on a facade. And inside, their experience is very different when you
Yeah,
talk to them.
absolutely. I'm finding people are more conscious of spirituality and their mental processes in the last few years than they've ever been before. Like a lot of people have been really happy to work towards the car and the house and, those very, very financial goals, whereas people are thinking about other things in the last few years. When you get a spot where your rights as human beings are taken away and you are told you are not allowed to go here, you're not allowed to go within X amount away from your home, you're not allowed to do your job if you don't do A, B, C, D, E. There's a lot of really good conversations going on out there, but it is creating a lot of trauma. At the same time, simultaneously, people thinking, well, why would I bother aiming towards this when I don't know what the government's going to do over the next 1, 2, 5 years?
Yeah, I agree. And that was one of the positive outcomes, if there were any of all of the lockdowns and so forth. So people trundle along, if you like, complacently on whatever routine that they have. And their intention is to make that experience of routine as pleasurable as possible. And when something like COVID comes in and there's no choice about, being locked down or whatever. And working from home and trying to renegotiate how you exist on a day-to-day basis, it does cause a shake-up just by nature. And a lot of people looking at doing the 9 to 5 thing and fighting through traffic for an hour to get to work and back, after experiencing months of working from home, have realized that it is possible. And wait a minute, am I actually designed to do what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Is it good for me? So that's one of the good things is, knocking us out of our complacency means that you rethink some of the things, mainly what's truly important to you and cars and houses and whatever. It's actually the house and the car, just using those as an
Yeah.
example, are both vehicles for someone wanting to experience something out of that. So what the person's maybe wanting to experience may be, sorry about that, that's my, what the person's wanting to experience is maybe security, the freedom to do, you know, to travel and what, and to enjoy life. That's the experience that they're after. And it's their belief system that thinks that the car and the house and the lots of money in the bank is what's going to give them that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. And many people have realized that that's opposite to the case, that you can have, you know, freedom experiences, you know, go to the beach and nature and enjoy authentic relationships. And none of those things cost money at all.
No, that's exactly right. And even being able to have a conversation on something like Zoom, which until, you know, 3 years ago, had many people even thought about doing that with their families around the world?
Yeah.
An interesting ideas. We started looking up things like card games online and all sorts of things to do things with our friends.
Oh, that you could play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're online. Right.
Yeah. So that was sort of interesting. And the amount of conversations I've had about the nature of the world and the way the world's been set up. And when people used to talk about things like you slave your life away, I never really understood what they meant. And these days it's becoming more and more apparent that even things like that monthly payment on that house that we work so hard towards, it's not making us rich, it's making the banks rich. You know, it's very yeah. much that it's slogging. It's a hard way of doing it.
And then you can go into rates and all sorts of things. You know, these governments come in and value the land, and it's obviously in their interest for the land to be highly valued because there's more rates on that. And insurance and so forth. My insurance for my house went up 38% this year.
Yeah.
Now, it actually went up over 50% because they naturally increase the price, you know, the valuation of the house and land each year. And so when I asked them to take it back to the original price, it was 38% more.
Yeah.
You know, now they're the little things that I have no idea where they get inflation percentages from, because, you know, what I'm looking at the day-to-day items that I purchase, or the regular items like insurance and food and fuel and all of those things, they've gone up a lot more than, what Absolutely. Are they saying, 7% or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. And I was listening to someone yesterday who was talking about the percentages of inflation around the world, and like Poland, it's 18%, and like all of these countries with these massive amounts of, yeah. And in when we were in Italy last year, we were there for a week and a half, and they were talking about so many of their things have literally doubled or tripled, you know, the electricity prices and things like that since Ukraine, you know, since everyone in the world has picked a side in a war. And then that creates all this massive inflation as well. Really quite bizarre.
Yeah. So you can kind of see, perfect storm rolling on for the last couple of years, right? So the COVID, the Ukraine, it's, you know, that all things that shake up the world, divisive, you know, there's been a lot of division going on, and people are buying into it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is, you know, biting against your fellow human man that is really doing the same thing or attempting to live or thrive in life the same as you are.
Yes.
They're in no way your enemy.
Yeah. You know? And that's how they keep us controlled, by keeping us fearful and angry all the time. So it's about constantly trying to create some division so that we're always, you know, we're always angry at something. Doesn't allow us to move forward in our own mind. And heart
yeah,
and soul.
Well, there's a lot of studies been done on, you know, the activation. So when you're angry, when you're emotionally activated and you've got all those chemicals dropping in, your brain functions far less efficiently. So if you're in a constant state of activation, then your brain simply is unable to do its job as well as it could. And so decisions you make may be less than optimal and so forth. So this constant state of activation in our nervous system, if you really wanted to kind of pull someone around on a string, that's how you do it.
Yeah. And that's what mainstream media has been doing for our whole lives, and so many people are finally seeing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What sort of tools do you teach or do you use that help to keep you nice and grounded and feeling safe in this crazy space on the planet at the moment?
Well, one thing I'll say is I have lots of tools and they are very effective tools. Nothing is effective all of the time, though. So grounded, there are times when I'm off in a hot air balloon of my own making. Many of the tools are understanding. So the approach to date has been kind of a behavioral one, and we actually learn that from when we're children. So when children do something that we like, we give them a reward. They like the experience of, the pleasure of getting a reward, and they dislike the experience of discipline, right? So we're kind of used to functioning that way. And because we're taught by parents, society, schools, there are all these rules that we're used to navigating. We adjust our behavior for this one and we avoid that conversation with another one and whatever. And so we've gotten to a point where a lot of us have less of an understanding of actually who we are and what makes our engine run, because we're all a little bit different, in order to rather than try and stop certain behaviors or think that we can stop certain behaviors that we have, that we actually understand where they're coming from and if they're driven by something that's unrealistic. Right. So, and I'll give you an example. So one of my, through deep introspection, if you like, one of my core issues is rejection. So I perceive rejection everywhere, even when there's no rejection in it, right? And so when I in the past, that feeling of rejection would come over me and I would react in a certain way to that. I'd go into fight or flight. So the rejection might re or my perception of it might go into crying or it might go into anger, right? I never questioned whether what I was experiencing was actually rejection. I just ran with the feeling. God, it's like getting on the train and it just goes. Yeah. So knowing that that's one of the things that drives my paradigm, if you like, I can be super aware of when someone says something, instead of jumping straight on the emotional and feeling train, I can say, now I know this is one of my triggers. I'm feeling rejected. Is it true what they said? And to pull back from it so I can have a conversation with the person rather than running away on my own emotional train. So I know that about myself. And that was a knowing that kind of thing about yourself is really important to understanding that sometimes we actually lie to ourselves. We lie in our thoughts to ourselves. We lie in our words to ourselves. And then we do behaviors that are completely inauthentic to who we are because we've never actually questioned that sometimes that little voice in our health. In our head that says, no, you can't do that, or that's too hard, or you'll go broke, or all those little voices, it's
Yeah.
and we believe it and go running off. So for me, that part of understanding yourself first before you add on any tools, whether they're meditation or breath work or mindfulness. All of those practices are excellent. Dancing, mantras, all of those practices can help work to settle the nervous system down, which is great. And what we're trying to get to is let's see why the nervous system gets activated in the first place, because it could be reacting to something that is a memory of the past or a personal paradigm that we've created, all based on the past.
Yes.
That adults no longer exists if we choose to let it go.
Yeah.
So to
And
me,
based
that's
on
the
some
important
emotions at
stuff.
the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people want to believe that everything they're experiencing now is as an adult and as a conscious human being, but so much of our brain is not wired that way. They say the brain is like a computer programmed by a 2-year-old.
You look at I'm a bit reluctant to use the word Karen, but you know the Karens, the videos that are out there, right? Uh-huh. You know, you look at those women who are literally having a high vocabulary 3-year-old tantrum. That's what they're doing, right? That's their emotional state. Now, they're extreme examples. And I look at things in the past 12 months, for example, when I have been, let's say, a little Karen in interactions, say with my partner or with different people, literally had a little emotional tantrum inside myself. And that might look like, so let's say, for example, I have an argument with my partner. And in the past, I would have thought nothing of, well, I'm not going to cook dinner tonight. And, you know, you can do whatever you want. And I'm going to go into my room and have a huffy puffy for a while. And if you try and talk to me, I'm going to snap at you like a little terrier.
Yeah.
That's all very childish behavior. So in many ways, if we're exhibiting those sorts of things anywhere, then we all have work to do in becoming an adult about our thoughts, words, and deeds, if you like, and managing our emotions as adults.
Yes.
And it's just as bad to suppress them too. You know, I know plenty of people who, you know, meditate or do whatever practice that they do, and they can get themselves into a Zen state. If you scratch the surface a little bit or question some of that, they erupt every bit as much as someone who's never sat down on a meditation stool.
Yeah. Yeah. So bit by bit, if they're just doing meditation, they're not learning the tools to train their brain to act like an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. And often, there's a lot of really good videos on YouTube. You know, there's a lot of speakers that are kind of talking about this stuff at the moment too. If you're really, really fortunate, you'll have somebody who can call you on that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, a partner that literally says, hey, wait a minute, you really are just carrying on. You know, go and settle down or do whatever you need to do and come back and we'll have a conversation. Because we're so used to kind of huffing off in our tantrum, and a lot of the time I kind of see men, let's say, I'm going to say facilitating, it's more allowing that stuff and never actually calling people on their bad behavior. And as women, we even fail to do that, I think, with one another.
Yeah.
We're too busy kind of backpatting and whatever. And you know, I know there have been instances in the past where some of my friends have been communicating things to me that were, you know, stories where their behavior was really out of alignment with any sort of integrity. And because they were good storytellers, everybody laughed.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I believe that it's a true friend. You know, yes, it's nice to enjoy one another's company and, you know, do things different. A true friend is someone who will call you on that, and it's a learning journey throughout the relationship that is designed for both of you to learn and grow together as friends or partners or family members or whatever. And the minute that you kind of subside into these conversations about other family members, gossip, the logistics of the day, whatever, that loses the flavor of learning and growth together, which requires you to call one another sometimes.
Yeah. And it's hard to do, especially when someone has, you know, anxiety or depression or something, and you know you're going to trigger them by saying absolutely anything.
Yes, and there it is, because very few of us are comfortable with dealing with any sort of Karen, right? In any sort of circumstance, because it activates us too. So yes, and there's that old saying, get it, the shoot the messenger kind of thing, is you can be saying something that is really helpful for that person if they chose to listen. And my guess is, for me, when I've been direct with people, it's kind of a 50-50 thing. If I'm generous, that 50% of people are interested in hearing it and asking more, and 50% react quite strongly.
Yeah, that's interesting that you get 50% that are open to it.
Well, and I maybe I'm saying that I sometimes have a forceful personality, Madonna, so maybe they're just by the force of my personality, they're sitting and saying nothing also,
Yeah,
just
interesting.
in
Because I
it.
know it's one of the phrases I use with my clients on the table when I'm doing kinesiology, and they're doing exactly that, telling me about their partner or their marriage or their relationship or their work. And I say, you have to have an adult conversation about this. I said, do you want to be in exactly this same place in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years? I said, if you don't change this, you will be. And you'll hate yourself more and you'll be more anxious about it because you're not getting past that hurdle of having an adult conversation.
Look, I think you're very lucky if you grew up in a household where your parents did sit down and have adult conversations with one another, and you observe that, without the anger and the arguments, or even those little unseen barbs, because women tend to throw the unseen energy barbs rather than kind of hit things face to face sometimes. So if you're a child that grew up witnessing that and then participating in that, I think you're a very lucky person. I cert That was nothing like my experience.
No, mine neither.
And having an adult conversation, like most people, my partner and loved ones are the ones who can trip off my triggers faster than anyone can. And having an adult conversation for me is an ongoing thing because it's tied to that rejection. So I kind of jump straight in. So actually sitting down and having a logical, thoughtful, honest, and heartfelt conversation without any of that underlying goopy energy. That's a, it's, well, I've been focused on it for some time and I'm still getting there, let's say.
And is it about creating a really nice space to do that? Because the last thing you want to do, I'll tell you a funny story. This is me having a little bit of gossip about myself. So going back about 10 years ago, I had a big clinic down in Wynnum, and my hubby and I were doing dance lessons at the time, and there was this particular night where he was given one instructor who was a tall, lanky, cheeky babe in a gorgeous little black dress, and I was given a dude, and we both did our first ever close dancing at dance lessons, and I was eyeballing that chick dancing with Jay, and we'd been married like 20 years by that stage, but I was eyeballing her on the way home, and I knew something had gone off in my brain. I could not talk to him. I could not talk to him. And the next day I went to work and I booked myself in with Norm, my kinesiologist at the time, and I told him the story and he just laughed. And he said, Madonna, you freaking women, you destroy every relationship with this sort of shit. And I said, I know that. That's why I'm here. And I think it was maybe Wednesday before I hadn't spoken to him. And maybe the dance lesson was Monday night. Wednesday morning, I sent Jay a message saying, we need to talk tonight. So I'd had two sessions with Norm and I thought, okay, I'm ready. It was total jealousy. It was ridiculous. It was totally ridiculous. Anyway, so Jay, all day at work, he actually thought that I was going to break up with him. He had created this whole other thing in his head where we've got this friend Tony and he's a naturopath. So Jay decided that obviously I needed to be with the naturopath Tony and that I was leaving him for Tony. And by the time we got that night and had this big conversation, I said, yeah, I know I've been acting like a jerk and He said, well, I thought you were going to break up with it. And I'm like, oh my God, the places our brain can go to with absolutely no, there's no reality in there. There was nothing.
Yeah, for you, watching this thing, this thought goes off. And for him, the same thing, the thought goes off. And next minute, you're spiraling to something that's never happened, is nothing
No.
part of reality. And
No.
that's why coming back and questioning your own thoughts is that's a really powerful tool, is when I get activated and I can hear the stories going on because they go on in the future, or what if he does this, or she says that, or da, 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 da. So that's the future thing. And
Yeah.
they also go off into the past of, oh, she said this, I should have said that, you know, like that's
Yeah,
the past
totally. Lots of
part.
sleepless nights do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the most powerful question to ask yourself is it true? Is it true what I'm thinking in my head? And then be prepared for the answer to be no, because we're quite resistant to letting go of something that we have bought into already.
Yeah.
All right. So sometimes, like, is it true? Oh, yeah, but da, 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 you hear your voice go on. Yeah. And is it true? Is it true? Is it true? Because often what we've gone on, what we've gone off with and reacted to is less about the core of what happened and more about this junk that we've put around it and made up.
Yeah. Yeah. My hubby and I did a drive to Bowen last year, and one of the realizations I had on his behalf, and he agreed with me, which was even more bizarre for him because he doesn't tend to think too much about things, was that we went to visit his grandparents in the graveyard, and we were chatting about his childhood. His dad left when they were like 10 years old, stole, they just sold a business, they sold a house, so they ended up with nothing, lived in caravans and little houses and things for a few years. And as a result of all of that, we realize that that's why he now has to be the perfect host. In fact, he has to be both the perfect host as well as the perfect guest. He will always do more as a host than anyone else I know. He will also be the perfect guest and take more as a guest than anyone I know. And
Yeah.
so with this realization, when we're chatting about his childhood last year, and I said, maybe this is why. And we had this discussion. And he said, yeah, you're probably right. Because he hates being that person who's not enough. He's not enough. He doesn't like being
Yeah.
not enough.
No, yeah, that's nobody does. And I think that's an experience that a great majority have in some form or another of not being enough. And I guess now the upbringing, if you say, if that's attached to how he behaves as a host and as a guest, that's kind of like the automatum, right?
Yes.
He has built up this persona that has become automated.
Yeah.
In order to protect himself from this feeling of not being enough. Okay, so that's stage one. Stage two is to come to the point where there is no need for you to do him to do extra, or anyone to do extra, or behave in a certain way in order to be enough.
Yeah.
And when you stop doing something that's on autopilot, so let's say, for example, you know, every party you and your husband go to, he takes a casserole to, right? Even though food is provided, so that might be his extra thing. It's like, okay, so let's stop taking the casserole and sit with the feeling that that brings up, because you've just taken yourself off automated mode that was developed as part of a child,
Yes.
and you've taken that away. Now let's see what feelings come with that. And it may be arriving to the first party, you know, he says something like, I normally bring a casserole, but I was busy this week. Okay, so why justify?
Yes.
So there's a whole, you know, little soup of interesting things once you take yourself off autopilot with anything and make something conscious. There's usually a diamond mine of growth and information there.
Yeah, beautiful. Everyone loves justifying things. Like it's such a social, it's just one of those social norms that isn't great for us.
Yeah, well, can you come to a party? No, I've got a da da da. Like, there's no need to explain what it is that you're doing or, otherwise. In a lot of cases, and we do jump onto that, and we like to justify because all of us like to be right, right?
Nah.
We're an interesting, I remember my grandfather saying, people are interesting cattle. They really are. We come with free will and are, dropped on the earth with no user manual except what we could learn by witnessing the world around us, and we've done well to be sitting here taking a breath right now. Everybody's done well because they've survived. And is there a more conscious way of doing it than simply going back to patterning that starts to feel like coat of many colors, if you like, that you're putting on, and you're being a chameleon in all environments. And that takes effort, to pretend to be an extrovert when that's other than your preference, or to hold back saying things because you know that somebody's got a bit of a trigger about it. That takes a lot of work to be other than yourself. And it also takes a lot of work to work out what yourself is. For me, I've had now 56 years of conditioning. So working out how much of that belongs to family, society, just the way things have been in my life, and how much of that is authentically me, that's work too. So I've got to dig through a whole lot of dross.
And you say we're born with free will, but how true is that? You have to work out that you've got free will. You have to get out of that matrix that we're born into where we're told every single day what we're doing, where we, where we go, where we sit, where we stand, what room we go into, and then slowly but surely try to get out of that matrix and go, hang on, there's a whole world out here. What do I want to believe? Do if I
Well, and there's an interesting language twist on that too, Madonna, is, we're very familiar with using the word I want, which is a word of lack, if you like. And it's kind of a beggar word. And actually, when I hear somebody say, I want, immediately in my head, I get that scene from Oliver Twist,
I
more
want some
please.
more.
Right? Yeah. So, the language of want is, let's say, a slave word.
Because you have to ask for
And you
something.
can shift that. And that's a simple language thing that we teach in our Certificate 3 in personal empowerment, is one of them is to shift your word to I choose. Because you always have choices. Some of them are going to be, desirable, some of them less desirable. And you still always have choices. And by choosing, you're showing your will and you're showing your freedom. And simply by every time you hear yourself say, I want, is, kind of cancel clear that. I'm going to rephrase and say, I choose. To stay at home and wash my hair tonight instead of going to the party, right? It tells your subconscious that you have the capacity to choose. It reminds you of your own will.
Beautiful. Because even if people are in the worst space they can be, there's still choices being made every single day.
Absolutely.
And people
Look,
want to blame it.
you can say, I have no choice. I have to pay my rent. Okay. And you do have a choice. Okay. You have a choice of leaving your rent, moving out, moving into a caravan. You have choices. They're undesirable choices. So in paying the rent, you're actually choosing what is the most desirable choice for you, to have a roof over your head. And the point is, acknowledge that you do have choices, because whenever we're using the word I want or I have to, what we're saying is I'm on train tracks and I have no choice about these things. And you're telling your subconscious that as well.
Yeah.
And so suddenly you start to feel like a bit of a victim and, you know, those kinds of things. So the simple point of opening up to there are other choices.
Yes. Yeah.
Is the, okay, now I'm a human being that is self-directing my life a little more than feeling like I'm just on these train tracks according to what somebody tells me.
Yeah. It's not a very attractive quality, feeling like people are out of control. You know, it's not a very, it's not, it's very challenging to be around people who feel like they have no control in their life.
Well, they feel that. They feel totally overwhelmed. So, you know, there's no negating that. No, I think what a lot of people do is, you know, it'll be all right and just do this and, you know, settle down. When somebody is that overwhelmed, they're in that fight flight, so their brain isn't functioning properly. Right. Now, it may never have functioned all that well. Maybe they were super scatty and into imagination and making up stories. So their brain may never have functioned super well for their own well-being. And when they're overwhelmed, triple it. So, you know, they're going to see that they're pushed into a corner. And the idea is to practice practice your will and your choices when life is steady. Get your system used to saying, well, I just said I have to do that. Is that true? No, I could do this, this, and this, and the repercussions of doing those things are nothing that I want. So, yes, I am doing that. I'm choosing that. I no longer have to. I've acknowledged that there's other choices, and now I'm choosing that. So once you get your awareness around those steps when you're in normal, everyday, kind of comfortable world, when things come up to really rock your boat, you have built the muscle capacity in your brain to say, hang on, is that true? To go from that level of overwhelm into total zen-like existence, I think is pretty unrealistic.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the things that I did is I found that I can escalate quite quickly emotionally.
Yeah.
And my head gets in the game too, so that plays off one another. And for me to go from that state of hyper arousal into anything that resembles a calm, balanced, you know, everyday state, it's a huge leap for me.
Yeah.
And so I found I'm sitting here having tea. Ceremonial tea. I found for me sitting down and having ceremonial tea, this is in no way just a cup of Lipton's hanging on the bench as I buzz back and forth, right? I actually sit down, put music on, and just drink tea. That's all, just drink tea. That takes the edge off the activation for me. It's like a segue into, okay, so now I can do some, you know, some breathing or, you know, some meditation to.
And you've got the muscle memory attached to it as well, you know, because that's your little process. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, people drinking apple cider vinegar and water.
Many people go for a walk, you know, walk the dog or cook a cake, or they do something that kind of gets them a little bit settled, because to stay in the state of hyper arousal that I experience from time to time, that would be completely debilitating on you physically, emotionally, mentally.
Yeah.
Relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. The amygdala is where we store a lot of our little fight, flight, freeze areas. And I think when we're in stress, we've got 1/500th of a second to respond logically and creatively with a solution. And if we don't react logically and creatively, then within 1/500th of a second, we are in that old pattern in our brain. And by the
There's
time we're
a
having a panic
researcher.
attack, sorry,
No, go ahead.
by the time we're having a panic attack, our corpus callosum, which connects the two sides of the brain, it has less than 30% function going from left to right. So at least 70% of the neurons are shut down when we're actually having a panic attack.
There was a researcher, look, I'll likely get the decade wrong. It was 50s, 60s, 70s, called TJ Lingo. And I never knew what the T stood for. And he did a lot of work on the amygdala, and he calls it amygdala tickling.
Nice.
And he has a set of things, and basically what it is just to make yourself happy, like tickle your amygdala into dropping some of those nice hormones. So one of my favorites is, those cat videos you see where they're jumping at cucumbers and doing all sorts of silly
Yep.
things.
Sliding under
They're one thing.
doors.
So they're one of the things that can get a giggle out of me. Well, once you've got a giggle, your amygdala is tickled, right? And so it's basically teaching your amygdala that you can consciously put something in to tell it, to tell your whole body that the world is okay. And laughter, obviously, no one laughs really like a real belly laugh when they're in a space of anxiety. They might have a nervous giggle. A true belly laugh is impossible if you're in an escalated state. So the fact that you're laughing says that you've dropped out of it
And I
until
think
your head's game and
that's sort
starts
of why
telling you
the old
stories.
thing holding a pen in there. Like if you're not there yet, even just putting a pen between your teeth, because that actually activates some of your smile muscles.
All right.
So instantly the
Oh,
cheeks
wow.
go up a little bit and it starts to change the hormones in the brain.
I guess if you put a bigger pen in, the cheeks go up more,
It's thinking about
Well, they say
something
that and put a
consciously.
smile in your voice.
Amygdala
We're
tickling,
all
I like it.
it's one of the activities that we do in the course is to do a little meditation on taking people through what's the one thing in the next 24 hours that you could do that's totally spontaneous? Everything is supplied for you to do it, right? So take them through the journey. It might be, to fly to Melbourne to have lunch with my cousin, for example, and to think into that or to imagine into that, what that experience is going to be like. Because your body, and you well know this, Madonna, your body never lies, number one. And your body's alignment with the rest of your systems, it when you imagine something, your body reacts in the same way if you imagine it well as it does if it was an actual experience. And this is why visualization and meditation and work on a number of different levels is so you think of your, if you're a cat person, you've got a little fur baby and you think of it and it's all cuddly, your whole system reacts the same as if you were cuddling the cat, if you imagine it well. Powerful stuff for us when you know that to make conscious decisions on what you're allowing your system to do on autopilot that no longer serves your highest good, or what you're now choosing to change because you're choosing to change something that you've identified in yourself that had negative impacts. And it could be thoughts, could be emotions, and kind of the inability to deal with those as an adult. Could be your words, could be your actions. And looking at all of those things and going, well, something is off here if I'm having an experience that's painful. Something's off. Now my job is to work out what is it.
Yes, it's never about the dinner. It's never about the clothes on the floor. It's never about those things that make us lose our lolly. It's nearly always about exactly
No.
like the rejection as a child or as a kid. It's
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, respect is one, that comes up quite frequently. Someone will say, they're disrespectful. This person's disrespectful. And that's an opinion or a conclusion that they draw from a number of different behaviors that they've interpreted one way.
Right.
And the interpretation is based on their past. So, for example, in our house, we always took shoes off at the door. And the reason for it was because we lived on a farm, and usually your shoes were muddy, right? And there are people who would say, if I took my sh left my shoes on, let's say I'm at a friend's place, and I leave my shoes on, if they've grown up with that, they may think that that's disrespectful that I leave my shoes on. And it has nothing to do with respect or otherwise. It's simply conditioning. One person is taught to leave their shoes on, and another person is taught that they take them off. What the hell's it got to do with respect? It's a silly
No,
little example because we
no,
jump
no.
onto that.
But like you say, it's all about our own experience and what we believe from when we were little.
And we believe some doozies, or at least my experience, I believe some doozies, and it isn't until you start to question your own thoughts and the things that you're saying, and literally say, wait a minute, is that actually true? That might have been true when I was 15. That might have been true when I was 20. Might have even been true when I was 40. At least that was my experience. Is it still true? May never have been, may just have been a belief system that you bought into.
And most people just don't spend any time. Do you see a big difference in people who come to you for, say, the certificate three, like when they start compared to when they finish? Like you do see some really big growth, emotional and spiritual growth.
And so, while the course has some structure to it and content and different units that we go through, it really is taking wisdom that's existed through the ages. So there's modern and ancient wisdom everywhere. You need no course to find this wisdom, right? And then applying that to what that means to me as a person. So, for one of them, I'll give you an example. So, learning to control yourself. Yeah, in the past, we learned to control ourselves as kids. So, everything from controlling your toilet habits to controlling, whether you share or swear or, do whatever. We teach kids to do that. And as adults, you learn to control yourself because there are certain things that you can or can't say at work, certain things that you can or can't say in certain public. So that's controlling your behavior. That's right at the end of the spectrum. Our actions and our outcomes are really close. If I don't control myself, I'm going to have an argument. That's the outcome. Yeah. If all I'm doing is trying to control, which at the action level is suppression, right? If I only get it to the suppression level, then when it becomes unsuppressed, and that might be when nobody's watching, right? When it becomes unsuppressed, it's still going to pop out. So to me, doing that, learn to control yourself or manage yourself when it comes to the behavior end, it's too late. It's still possible. It's also too late. If I can pick it up in my words before my behaviors, like I can catch myself, oh, I just said I want this and I have to do that, or I've gone into a bit of victim here, what's going on with me? If I can catch myself at that level, I have more leverage before it gets to outcome. And if I can catch it right back at the thought emotion mix, right? So something happens, I kind of get a dump of some chemicals that puts me on alert, and I observe these thoughts coming in. If I can catch it at that level, then I have some power in myself rather than somewhat down the track when it's too late.
Right.
Or it's harder when it's yes. down to that. You're really suppressing it.
Yes.
So, yeah, to answer your question, all of the students who have finished have had big shifts in their thinking and their ways of doing things, which has impacted their outcomes. And they're all quite specific because they're all very different. We're quite interesting. Like, and once you just go, okay, well, how does a human being function? And how do I function in particular? You know, what are the little bits of baggage I'm carrying? So for me, it's a bit of rejection and, you know, there's a bit of ego in there. I've got my little baggage, you know, that I trundle. Once I identify what that is, I've got something to work with because I choose to be in integrity with who I really am.
Yeah.
And honourable about that. So my whole life, whether I do a certain job, live a certain place, have whatever relationships, they're all kind of incidental because my job, in my view, is simply to become the best expression of myself that I possibly can be for me and humanity. And when that's the focus, all the other stuff is incidental. And yes, I like to have the comforts and all of that. It's incidental, though. The amount of internal, oh, look at me go, that I get when I overcome, I see, for example, that I've just gone into rejection and it's unrealistic. I catch it and throw it away.
Yeah.
Right. And then I carry on with my D. The very act of doing that over seconds, being able to do that, it's like, go me. Yeah. And it's nicer for relationships because if I jump into this rejection thing and get my emotions and thoughts mixed into it, I'm building an energy with whoever it is that they're likely to come back at me with the same energy and it ends up with an argument. If I can deal with it right at the beginning, that the whole train I was jumping on was a lie, it never has to evolve into the outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. And are there little phrases that you teach people to get them into that way of thinking? Because, you know, the whole Susan Jeffers thing is, she wrote the book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And she said that we have somewhere between 70 and 100,000 thoughts a day. And when we're negative, 90% of them are against us. They're working against us. So if we're thinking, no, I'm going to move forward with my life and my spirituality and be the best version of I can be, but 60 to 100,000 negative thoughts are going through every day saying, yeah, I don't think so. We're not going to get very far.
Yeah. And Joe Dispenza says, well, there's actually quite a lot of wisdom keepers around this. Joe Dispenza also says the same thing, and he says that is it 90 or 95%, I think, of the thoughts of those 40 to 70,000 thoughts, 95% of them are recurring. So, in other words, we thought them yesterday, the day before, and the day before that. And in terms of what he's talking about is creating intentionally creating your life, and he has a whole set of tools with it. And he basically says, if you're still thinking the same 95% of the things that you thought yesterday, that's what got you here. So tomorrow, if you're still thinking the same thing, is you're going to be somewhere around here.
Yes.
There'll be no changes. And it's an interesting activity to catch yourself thinking new things, new ideas, you know, could be anything from solving a problem that you had, you know, this tap doesn't match that tap, what can you do? And coming up with a solution, that's a new idea. So that thought never happened yesterday or the day before.
Right.
So practicing new ideas by listening to new information, even information that triggers you. In fact, if you can cope with it, even better. because the triggers come up, you go, whoops, there's something in there about my belief system that's, you know. In fact, the more triggered you are, that's where the more diamonds are. It's just that it can be an unpleasant place to be for any length of time.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
The phrases, no. I'll use all of the wisdom keepers because they have some good ones.
Yeah.
Mine, I guess, is it really true?
Yeah.
Is it really true? Is it really true? Like, ask yourself and be prepared to answer yourself honestly, because, you know, the top coating of many of us is our justifications and our excuses and our holding on to what we have built up over a lifetime, and we resist finding something different to that.
Yeah. And I think that's been one of the interesting things the last few years as well, how many people have been in industries and jobs where they've realized, they've gone, I'm not sure this is what I want to spend my energy doing for the rest of my life. Yeah,
particularly when they see no benefit in it for themselves or their families, and, you know, they're just churning out hours and money that, you know, quickly disappears the way it has been, you know, in the last couple of years for people. Yeah. It's people are starting to say, that treadmill, what am I doing on it?
What am I doing on it? Yeah, it's a slave treadmill. It's designed to keep us broken working. In a lot of discussions the last couple of years by people I've listened to about the words that we use, you know, so like weekend, if you think about it another way, is weakened, you know, and there's just so many of these little words, like even mortgage, you know,
mortars. Death.
And gauges, so it's like a death wish to the day you die. The banks want you to be paying them for your entire life. Yeah. So a lot of the words, if you look that we the have etymology, in our daily lives.
Well, and you know, listen to the words that you say. So one of the common ones is, you know, I love my kids to death. Do you really?
Yeah. Oops.
Do you really? You know, when you actually think of the words that we're using, like you said, the etymology of the words, you know, what we're saying and what we think we're saying, if we followed what we actually are saying, we would rethink.
Yes.
And, you know, through all wisdom keepers, and I'm talking thousands of years, the Bible, every religion, you know, talks about the power of words, because words are your thoughts becoming distilled and more tangible. And it's our thoughts that talk to our actions, our and our outcomes, right? So they're very powerful, our words.
So maybe that's the first step for someone who's never done anything. Like, if they're not going to be able to catch their thoughts, the first step might actually be paying attention to their words and then becoming very aware of that first.
Yeah, and there's a great book. I may have it downstairs. It's called Conscious Language, The Logos of Now. When you do this podcast, I can put it up in the comments thing.
Beautiful.
By a man called Robert Tennyson Stephens. And I read the book. I've read it a number of times now and kind of distilled it through my own process and my understanding. It was one of those books that I read where I just went, this is the key. This is what people can understand. You know, our thoughts are so amorphous, and having 70,000 to sift through them every day and be conscious about them would be quite difficult.
Yes.
Our words are speaking to our state of being. You know the words you choose when you feel crappy, and the words you choose when you feel excited. When you're feeling loved, they're all different. So your words are speaking to your state of being, and they're speaking to your belief system and what you believe will happen. Because as soon as you say that that's not possible, it's not, because you've looked the other way.
Yes.
Yeah. So that book, I recommend that to anyone. It really was, this is it. Like, this is the key to really diving into ourselves. From a logical perspective.
Yeah. Because I think people need to be doing this more than ever, especially if they're starting to wake up with the shenanigans of the last few years. They're looking for solutions moving forwards, you know?
Yeah.
And
well, we can listen to politicians' words, Madonna, right? And by the time you see them in print, you're like, my brain just kind of did a little bit of a twist because you just wrote three paragraphs and said nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very interesting. And with the international health regulations going on at the moment, sort of funny with the whole happiness thing, part of what they want to do with the 64 pages of changes that are probably going to be ratified next month because the world's so stupid at the moment. The health regulations feed the World Health Organization, and a couple of the words that will probably get ratified is that they're taking dignity and happiness away from the requirements for the World Health Organization as aims.
Wow. So,
just phenomenal. And funnily enough, it was India. It was India's representatives who recommended removing dignity. So then if you think about the big pictures of the World Health Organization, and you sort of, or if it, it just say we don't know what it is, but I've got a bit of an inkling, you know, you go, right, why do they not need happiness and dignity to be part of the overarching aims of the World Health Organization? And a lot of these international health regulations.
Their aims are in no way in my interest because I choose dignity and happiness.
Yes. And it sort of will go from a regular, it will go from a body if these get passed. And this is why we need so many people waking up at the moment, just to even be aware of this stuff. Because at the moment, the World Health Organization, they make suggestions to the world. If these IHRs go through, then it will be law. So 196 countries around the world, there will be billions of dollars of fines for countries who don't do what the World Health Organization says. So it's an interesting time, you know.
These World Health Organizations are effectively global bureaucrats. They've never been elected into that position. And the World Health Organization is a business like any other. So it has to pay for things and it charges fees for whatever its service is. So basically our governments in doing that would be saying, you take care of it and we'll pay for it. And you being some shadowy figure in the background that was never elected by anyone.
Yes.
That's making money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too many of them around, these organizations.
Way too many of them around, absolutely. And I think that's sort of part of the challenge moving forward, isn't it? You know, the more aware we were, like I'd never heard of World Economic Forum 3 years ago. You know, so the more you become aware of all of these global elites who really seem to be in control of the world in one way or another, the more we have to be in touch with our own heart and soul and mind, body and spirit, so that we can stay as centered as possible moving forward for ourselves and Absolutely. The people around us. Yeah.
Well, to stay centered and have our brains and our hearts functioning optimally. And that means keeping your nervous system balanced rather than going into fight or flight of any description. So, you know, even people who are against, let's say, you know, the World Health Organization or whatever, is they can get very activated in the fight flight and go into fight mode.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And either one is no good for us individually, and we make poorer decisions when you're activated.
Yes.
So if we actually choose to stop something, you know, like our involvement in this stuff, then the first step is to make sure that we've actually removed that activation first before we go in and try and find solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when people first find out about a lot of this stuff, they do get very activated. Like to me, I keep saying to people, well, information is power. Like to me, I've hit a spot where I've gone down many rabbit holes and I know a lot of stuff about the big picture. So to me, it doesn't particularly stress me out too much anymore, but it's because I've got such a huge base of knowledge. And people always say, why? And you go, well, why do rich people do anything? Why do the elites do anything? You know, it's all about control, money, and power. You know, it's the way they've always been. And that has never changed and it's not likely to change. But if people are waking up to it, they have less control if people say no to all sorts of shenanigans.
Well, it's a bit of that red pill, blue pill thing, right? You know, you can take the blue pill and literally just shut down, operate in the world the way you'd like it to be. And anytime it's outside of that, you can have a little bit of a hissy fit and just let things roll on. Or you can take the red pill and, you know, have a look at what's really happening and start questioning some of the things that are being told about whether it's, is that true? Is that really true?
And it is it's very interesting because it does feel like a huge, like, because I've been a naturopath now for, like, this is my 29th year. And when I first, like, it just say the internet, when you'd be looking at things like side effects of something or, you know, in-depth things, you just couldn't find a lot of stuff on the internet. And as we know, most of it's paid for by the elites anyway. So they'll allow a little bit to filter through, but so many of good websites that actually have huge amounts of good information, they're shadow banned. So even when people are trying to go out there and find things, but because the internet has sprouted so much, even in, you know, things like fraud book and stuff like that, but there's still a lot of information when you're looking for it that people can access, which is quite amazing because if people choose to wake up, there's certainly a huge amount of information out there allowing them to do so.
And there's many doorways into it too. You know, you can do it from a spiritual or a personal development perspective. You can do it from a political perspective and go, what the hell's going on here? You can follow the money. You can, you know, there are many ways for you to go, okay, I'm questioning this that before I thought was truth. And now I'm getting signals that maybe it's a lie. So ask the question, is it true or is it a lie? And then, you know, there's lots of ways to find information. And the one good thing about the algorithms is once you've found one thing, generally the algorithms will give you more of the same, which is part of the reason why these things become a bit of an echo chamber. It's also something to be aware of, you know, that once you've identified, you know, the doorway into the rabbit hole, the labyrinth is endless.
It is. It is. And I think keeping a, you're exactly right, keeping calm or at least having those daily discussions with ourselves to end our meditations and our little processes to keep ourselves as healthy as possible through all this, because otherwise we're not going to make it. You know, there's going to be a lot of people getting very, very fearful and angry once they really wake up and start seeing the real world around them.
And as you'd know, there's a lot of, you know, that fear and anger, you know, there's a lot of chronic diseases that are associated with, so your body actually reacting, you know, there are two systems. Our emotional system is contained within our body. So this fear and anger stuff, there's a lot of serious conditions that are linked with that, you know, holding that as a way of being or suppressing it. That your body goes, well, hey, now I'm going to show you a different way then.
I had a someone in recently who, in fact, I've had 3 in 3 months, which is just bizarre. Satanic ritual abuse survivors. 3 in 3 months. So when the third one came in and he's telling me a little bit about his life, and I said, are you an SRA? And he just had this look of, oh my God, I can't believe she just asked me that. And he said, yes. And it's really interesting that at the, and I said to him, well, I would have been useless to you 3 years ago because I wouldn't have understood what you've gone through. And he had so many aha moments just because I have allowed myself to open my eyes to another one of these realities on the planet that is horrific. It's just horrific that this is possibly going on. And I think that's the sort of thing, like it's so easy. Imagine 20 years ago, if someone had said that to me, I don't know what I would have said. Or maybe they wouldn't have said it. And now I'm even rethinking all my clients. I've got other people now in my mind that I've gone, oh my gosh, maybe this person
Yeah.
and this person and this person. And I just didn't have the terminology or the knowledge at the time.
Yeah.
And I think I
Yeah,
was
there's.
very lucky. Someone challenged me 3 years ago and said to me, well, actually, he sent me home with homework. So I was having this coffee with someone one day, and he sent me home to check out the Georgia Guidestones and,
Gone now.
yep, and maybe 9/11. He gave me a 9/11 clip to watch, and I wasn't injured. I was like, oh, who cares if 9/11 wasn't real, you know? Like that's honestly where my brain went. But
Yeah.
then when you look into it and you go, oh, that's why it's important. Interesting. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
yeah. Because it's not just the fact that these things aren't real. It's the fact that when you look underneath it, it's huge. The reason
Yeah.
for it not being real is huge.
Well, what's sort of taking my fancy at the moment is this whole, the CGI world and
Yes.
also mask wearing. We were shown that with Mrs. Doubtfire, right? The
Ah,
mask.
yes.
That was years and years and years ago that someone was wearing a mask. And it's like now, really, I can watch whether it's the news or whether it's a movie, our CGI and this mask and makeup and special effects is so good now. How would I know the difference?
No, exactly.
How would I know the difference? And so then it comes to, well, is it true? It's like, okay, well, the building fell down in 9/11, for example. And we landed on the moon, so the TV said, right? My experience, though, is I have no firsthand knowledge of any of it. And this digital world is so lifelike now, and it has been for some time.
And
How do I know
holograms.
anything that I'm that I can touch, taste, see, da da da, like my physical environment now, the fact that we're having a conversation that's a real conversation, I know that's real.
Yes.
Anything else, really, I'd be kind of smart to question it, right?
Yes. Well, at the World Economic Forum, this year, Zelensky turned up as a hologram. So they actually said, you've got to watch this video, in my, little algorithm. Someone sent it to me. So I'm watching it. And it went for about 2 minutes. And about halfway through, he said, by the way, I'm not really here. And he disappeared and he came back again because he was a hologram. He looked as real as frickin' anything. So they
Yeah.
did that as an example in the World Economic Forum.
We have to be so careful about what we believe, actually, and the places where we're getting information from,
Yeah.
because it's increasingly getting more difficult to work out what's true and
Yeah.
what's just made up to get us into a state.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Like even my hubby can't watch normal TV anymore. And I sit there, if we're watching a movie or something, trying to relax, and I go, oh, here's some pre-programming again. For a long time I've gone, oh, let's just wait. There's gonna be a vaccine to save the world any second now. And sure enough, it'll come out to save the zombies, or it'll come out to do this. And I go, yep, there we go. Public announcement
Yeah.
number 24.
Yeah. Yeah. I find I never watch mainstream news. I find the whole hype and it's like every news show that you watch or current affair, there's an emotional content underlying it where they're actually pushing you into feeling or emoting, if you
Yeah.
like, about something. I watched the news when I did. It was like, is this news? How is this news? With all the things going on in the world, they pick something pathetically insignificant. And the same with movies. I'm finding watching movies is now I'm starting to look at them, particularly all those dystopian movies, The Hunger
Yep.
Games and
Absolutely.
all of those. And I'm going, how much of that, aside from the visuals, is actually happening?
Yes.
You know, yeah, it's oh, look, it's a fun game
It
being on
is
the
a
planet
fun
right
game. But we have to
now.
watch it with a smile on our face or go crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe crazy is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I interviewed Dr. David Nixon yesterday, and he's been doing all sorts of interesting things for the last 12 months. And he said to me that as a doctor of nearly 30 years, he questions everything now. Like he can't think of anything that he has known his entire world as a doctor. And he sort of, in relation to all current stuff, it was about 18 months ago that he really started questioning things. It took him a little while. He was late to the party, but that's okay. And now he is just a dynamo. He is just working in his own little world to save humanity. And he, even things like, you remember that picture in grade like 10 science, the picture of the mitochondria with all the little bits and pieces, the endoplasmic reticulum, and all sorts of stuff? He was saying, you never see anything about the mitochondria except as a cartoon. He said, does any of that exist? Or is that all just made up as some way of explaining some mechanism of a drug that may or may not have an explanation? You know, so we had this bizarre conversation where even as a doctor, he's now looking at cells because he bought his own microscope a year ago. So he's got a year's experience at looking at live blood. And I've been doing it for like 15 years. And somewhere throughout our conversation, I said, well, I've been questioning it for a long time. I'm thinking, well, what cells are they looking at where they see all this other stuff inside cells? Because it's not what I see. And I thought, there must be other cells. So anyway, it's sort of fun watching him wake up as a doctor.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you know, more of us could do it because the fact is, let's say the legal system, so everyone involved in the legal system, I think most people would say that our legal system has some serious flaws,
Yeah.
right? Our health care and the health of humanity has the lifespans been increasing, and the actual health of the people living has been deteriorating through all sorts of
I
things.
think
So
the
this
lifespan has started going down in the last 2 years
hasn't.
because of the young age that people have been, our
Yeah, the
excess
sad stuff.
deaths. So it's starting to
Yeah.
decline again, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you know, you look at health, you look at education. So if you look at society the way it is now, it's a reflection of all of the inputs. And I would say, as a society, that we would be wise to go right back to the drawing board instead of taking our health system and packing more onto it, right? So basically icing a cake that's already burned. Is go back to the health system, because the outcomes, what we have in society now is serious dis-ease
Yeah.
and ill health. So there's something wrong with the inputs.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with the inputs of education also, that we've
Yeah.
got people who, you know, maybe can't do basic maths, can't problem solve, can't think for themselves, you know, that kind of thing. I think all of those structures, if we came to the table with a blank slate and said, how are we going to choose to create the world and what do we choose it to look like? Never mind what's been done in the past. We'll take what's good out of the past
Yeah.
and use that, but it's got to be of value to our current viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, we'd be good to question all of it,
There's a much
including
hated,
us.
yeah. There's a much hated politician in America who's talking about starting a new city, getting rid of 90% of medicine, starting with health and getting rid of 5G and just basically creating a new utopia with a dealing with local farmers and local, because they haven't built a new city in America for like, 150 years. So it's interesting that someone's discussing this at the moment and saying, hey, we've got to go back to grassroots of what's good for us. What's healthy? What do we
Like
need?
Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, you know, that book that was written, I think it was in the 50s. And the outcome was a utopian society and what that would look like in terms of people's contribution to it and whatever it looks like. He's either creating that or he's found another way for this 15-minute smart cities to be appealing to a different set of people.
It didn't feel like the smart city thing. It felt much nicer than that. Because a lot of the smart city thing is about connecting us to the Internet of Things, the Internet of People, all of that sort of thing. So having enough technology in and around us so that we are connected to all of, the computers and things like that, so that I saw a presentation recently where there was a document leaked from military in America in 2001, and it was talking at the time about technology in our bodies that could connect us to Wi-Fi, internet, 3G, 4G, 5G, 6G. I think they might have gone up to 7G in 2001. And using the energy from our heart and lungs and brains to feed back into the grid. 20.
Oh, that's so Matrix-like. That's like Matrix at
It's totally Matrix stuff. And it's amazing because this woman's presentation was over 2 hours long, and that's just one of the things that was horrifying in the whole thing. And 26 countries went along at the time for this particular military information session. So there's very interesting stuff, and I think this is why we also have to be so aware of our health and everything we're doing. And that's whether it's every thought we have, whether it's creating that calming environment around us, having techniques in the day to calm us down, making sure we're eating the best food we can eat, splurging occasionally, but just being aware. Some people have no awareness of the food that they're eating. They think they're eating well, and you have a look and you go, well, 55% of that is super processed, which is average, by the way, in the Western world. 55 to 65% of our food is super processed.
Oh, that's so sad. So sad. It's nothing quite as empowering as growing your own tomato.
Yeah. Start with the basics, start with the easy. Yeah, beautiful. Any final thoughts you would like to share, Donna?
Oh, look, I think we could sit and have a yak for a very long time. Am I permitted to do a little plug for the certificate
Absolutely,
three? Yeah.
please do.
So we've got another one. It's a certificate three in personal empowerment. And we have another one starting in a month or so. It's kind of an 18-month program. With 2 hours a week of Zoom sessions. So, in very small groups that we go through the content and then do the activities and apply the learnings to our own life and so forth for growth. And then we have a retreat as well, to do the little hands-on, the stuff that's better done in person. So, if anyone is interested in, I guess, learning more about how to drive their own human spacesuit a little more comfortable, then I guess they can contact Blueprint Career Development if they do a search, or I can put it somewhere on the link. We'd love to have a really great group of people that choose to really understand themselves so that they can take themselves out into the world.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I might give myself a little bit of a plug. I've got my first online freebie next week. I did all this coaching recently, and sort of very similar. This one's a free Facebook group called Awesome Energy Healers, and I've got 5 hours of free training each night next week from 6 to 7 p.m. Brisbane time. So it's getting
Lovely.
the brain and energy up and running. So just some healing tools, and once
I'm
again,
sure our small bite-sized manageable pieces. Yeah. So I'm quite sure our past and current students, that would be of interest to them too. So it's is it They apply, they can just join. How do they get registered
with the Zoom call? So I'll put the names down here of both your business and mine. Yeah, so with mine, they need to be part of, I've got another Facebook group called Kinesiology Kickstart or Kickstarting Kinesiology. So they need to be part of that and they need to be registered with the Zoom call. And yeah, it's going to be a bit of fun. So I'm working away,
having
sleepless nights in the background.
But, that's fun. That's something new.
Exactly. I'm doing that whole thing of thinking through whole conversations and yes, but I've been teaching kinesiology a long time. I just love it.
Yeah.
And actually, I was thinking before about an example of how just affirmations aren't enough, you know, because a lot of people have their affirmations, but they never really change. And one of my ladies, when she did Touch for Health with me, going back about 15 years ago, and she was a really strong, dynamic woman. On the Enneagram, she's an eight. She's a controller, but she's also that mother lion, you know. So you love an eight because they're big and they're strong. And if you're having problems, you want them in your corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I just asked everyone, I didn't think about how challenging it was at the time. I asked everyone to just do a simple balance, like, I love myself. Well, anyway, you can imagine, not so easy for some people. That ended up being a massive, massive balance for so many people. I learned from that. But this particular woman, that she was the only person in the class that everything locked, you know, so there was no stress showing up consciously. But she had been doing that affirmation in the mirror every day for a year. So it was a lock, wow. You know, there was no stress associated with it. So I said to her, the chick who was working with her, I said, I'll just change it around a bit. So just change it to say, I love myself fully and unconditionally. And that was different enough just with those extra few words and everything started unlocking and it took quite a bit of balance. But yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think affirmations are great.
Yes.
The issue with them is speaking them louder or speaking them more repetitively doesn't shut down the little voice that's saying to yourself, bullshit, bullshit.
Yes,
and while that little voice is there, your whole system knows that what you're saying is untrue, at least to your current state of being.
Yeah.
So, yes, affirmations are powerful in that start to listen to the voice, because if you truly believe it, it is a command to the universe.
Yes.
If you've got that little voice in the background going, yeah, right, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
The universe goes, yeah, right, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, when does your next program start?
Mid-April, I believe. I can also put that in the link at some point or give it to you, the start date.
Yeah, excellent. Well, that is amazing. Thank you so much for being such a awesome little light and being out there spreading just, you know, truth, love, shining. It's really nice.
Well, ditto. Ditto, it takes many of us to all do our work from our own particular experience and perspective. So,
yeah.
And thank you for having me on your podcast. I was a podcast virgin up until today.
Hey! Excellent. But you're a champion with Zooming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And funnily enough, you know, one of the benefits of the crazy last 3 years is actually getting myself into a headspace where believing I can teach kinesiology online, I would never have thought of it, but I'm getting way, you know, I'm getting lots of really good ideas. So I'm not worried about it. Anymore. I've gone from that is impossible to, of course it's possible.
Yes. Well, see, that's a huge step in making choices. Huge step.
Yes. I choose to believe it's possible.
Beautiful. Because it is.
It is. Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Donna. And talk to you soon.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.